Jordan comment. May we please have appearances of counsel?
Deputy Ethics Counsel Hillary Horton on behalf of the Office of Attorney Ethics.
Robin M. Hill of Santa Fe, New Mexico on behalf of Mr. Comet, who is also present.
Welcome, counsel. Mr. Comet, you'll have the opportunity, if you would like, to address the court. You'll have a chance to chat with your attorney beforehand.
Thank you, Judge.
Ms. Horton.
May it please the court, we're here on a matter that originated as part of the Random Audit Compliance Program from the Office of Attorney Ethics. The essential conflict in this matter is whether the admitted misappropriations were negligent or knowing, as respondent has not denied that the misappropriations have occurred. The OAE has consistently maintained that respondent knowingly misappropriated funds on 13 occasions. The special master in this case agreed with the OAE that the misappropriation was knowing, while the DRB majority, without explanation, substituted its own credibility determinations and decided that the misappropriation was merely negligent. However, the DRB minority found the misappropriation to be knowing, while acknowledging that this case, as in most cases of knowing misappropriation, would not include a smoking gun or spontaneous admission. The DRB minority, agreeing with the special master, agreeing with the OAE, determined that the evidence presented at the hearing compelled the conclusion that respondent knowingly misappropriated client funds by clear and convincing evidence. The heart of the matter is whether respondent, who admitted to financial difficulties and not having enough business to keep his practice afloat, and who also carefully monitored his attorney trust account so as not to obtain a negative balance, would cavalierly fail for over a year to confirm that a $50,000 retainer deposit had been made into that same account, his attorney trust account, all the while withdrawing money that cleared against other client funds, knowing that as long as he maintained that positive balance in his attorney trust account, no one would ever know that he had been misappropriating those funds. It was not until respondent was on the brink of overdrawing his attorney trust account that he borrowed $50,000 from a family member. In order to move the misappropriation from knowing to negligent, respondent offers one defense. He claims that the OAE, the special master, and the DRB minority improperly refused to credit his claim that his long-term client, Vincent DeVito of Adam Tech, had agreed to wire him upfront $50,000 for legal fees and expenses into his attorney trust account. Respondent claimed that he just assumed that the $50,000 had reached his account and was stunned to learn that the funds had never and were never wired into that account. The OAE has consistently maintained that respondent made absolutely no effort to actually confirm that the $50,000 ever hit the account, despite the fact that he had to do nothing more than log onto his account to check it online. The OAE has consistently maintained that respondent didn't check his account because he knew that the funds were not and had not been wired in. The OAE maintains that respondent's act juggling of his trust, business, and personal account belies his assertion that his woefully inadequate and negligent accounting practices alone caused the 13 instances of misappropriation. Additionally, the OAE credits the special master's credibility assessment, which favored DeVito's letter from August of 2011 to then Deputy Ethics Counsel Janice Richter, in which respondent told the OAE that he'd not agreed with respondent that he was going to give him the $50,000 and thus never sent the fence, over his dubious testimony 5 years later that he instead, meaning DeVito instead, intended to send the $50,000 but never got around to it. DeVito never did wire the $50,000 to respondent. In fact, sometime back in 2007, DeVito and respondent reached an agreement by which DeVito paid respondent $17,500 instead of the $50,000 to just end it. Although not strictly under appellate review, the special master who watched the witness testify and could firsthand evaluate his demeanor and credibility specifically found that DeVito's trial or hearing testimony was incredible. People's memories do not improve with the passage of time, rendering the information in the 2011 letter to the OAE more worthy of belief than the prepared hearing testimony elicited 5 years later. As the special master succinctly noted, before DeVito realized the significance of that March 5th, 2007 letter, he was adamant to the OAE that he never agreed to pay respondent $50,000. The special master likewise found respondent's testimony incredible. He questioned how someone with significant financial problems, as outlined in pages 15, 16, and 33 through 35 of the OAE's supplemental brief, who admitted that he did not reconcile his accounts and had frequent negative balances in the non-trust accounts, would not check for more than a year that a $50,000 deposit essential for keeping the practice afloat had been deposited. DeVito was hardly known for prompt payment. He was often months late with much smaller amounts that he owed respondent, and sometimes he did not pay respondent at all until respondent followed up with him. DeVito himself testified that he was not in the habit of chasing down people to pay them money. So, in conclusion, the OAE urges this court to follow the sound reasoning of the special master and the DRB minority in this case, and find that respondent's willful blindness, his continuous pattern of laughing, his Hail Mary request to borrow $50,000 from his brother-in-law on the brink of an overdraft that would lead to his to him being found out, as evidence that the misappropriation in this case was knowing, and that the unfortunate result is that respondent must be disbarred.
Questions, anyone? Thank you. Ms. Hill.
Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, may it please the court, this matter does not involve knowing misappropriation of client funds. The OAE's arguments are incorrect in large part and do not recognize much of the testimony and the evidence that's been put forth here. The proven facts of this case, together with the governing case law in this state, demonstrate that this is at most a negligent misappropriation of client funds and that a reprimand is the appropriate resolution. Neither the dissenting opinion nor the brief filed by the Office of Attorney Ethics nor the opinion of the Special Master establishes the necessary proofs to find knowing misappropriation. The Board specifically concluded from page 46 in its opinion, in this case we are not persuaded to a clear and convincing standard that respondent's misconduct was knowing, and based on the uncertainty surrounding the March 5, 2017 letter, which was sent by respondent to Mr. DeVito regarding their new fee agreement, the board was, quote, persuaded that respondent may have had a reasonable belief that DeVito had wire transferred the funds to his trust account. The OAE brief basically parrots the dissent and the decision of the special master without addressing any of the factually similar cases that we cited in our brief to this court, and even fails to address the Wigginton case cited by the board majority in its decision. The DRB relied on that case in recommending a censure, while we contend that the Gonzalez decision, which has many similarities to Mr. Comet's case, as well as the 2018 cases of Johnson and Maida, support the request for a reprimand and are more relevant to this matter. In all three of these cases, unlike Mr. Comet's case, those attorneys had received prior reprimand or admonition. Mr. Comet has an unblemished disciplinary history. This court has repeatedly found that neglect or stupidity or failure to reconcile accounts or woeful lack of knowledge of the status of one's accounts does not constitute knowing misappropriation or invasion, intentional invasion of trust funds. It is negligent misappropriation, pure and simple, and that's the case here. Mr. Comet has admitted that he made a huge mistake in this matter, what he called a very negligent error. He relied on the representations of his long-term client and the client's staff that a retainer had been wired to his trust account, and he testified that he might have mistaken another wire that was received at about the same time in a similar amount. This, in concert with his continuing failure to reconcile his trust account, led to the negligent misappropriation of client funds. There was no strategic planning or purposeful avoidance or monitoring of his trust account. Problem was, he didn't monitor his trust account to make sure he could misappropriated funds as claimed by the OAE. Let's look at what Mr. Comet did when he realized his account was about to be short. He immediately telephoned DeVito. DeVito confirmed this during his testimony, and they argued. They had an angry conversation because Mr. Comet believed he had the money in his account.
When was this?
In March of 2008. This is when everything basically hit the fan, if you will.
Can we go back a little bit in time before then?
Sure.
Your client has acknowledged he didn't review bank statements for his various accounts.
Correct.
And didn't keep the records that he was required to.
Correct. He didn't reconcile.
How did he know then how much to transfer from the trust account to the business or the personal accounts and when to make those transfers?
Okay. He was aware that he had $50,000, he believed, in his trust account as a retainer that he was entitled to use whenever he wanted to or needed to. He kept ledger cards. He had a ledger card specifically for the DeVito matter, which included that $50,000 fee. He had ledger cards for all of his other clients, and as the auditor for the OAE testified, all except DeVito were maintained to the penny. With regard to how he knew what the balances were in his business account or his personal account, and when he had overdrafts, he was contacted by the bank. Or he would call the bank if he was about to disperse a large amount in behalf of a client and make sure that the balance of his trust account would allow for that.
So let's talk about, if you could help us specifically, on the October 1st, 2007 transfer.
Mm-hmm.
He transfers, I'm looking at page 22 of the majority's opinion, $7,181 from his trust account to his personal account. And the personal account was overdrawn by $7,180.41.
Mm-hmm.
How did he know, within 59 cents, how much to transfer and when?
He would have either received a call from the bank or called the bank.
So he knew to call the bank to check the balance in his account, at least insofar as the personal. Did he ever do that with regard to the trust account?
I'm sorry if I was confusing in my statement. He did call when he had large amounts to pay out in behalf of clients to make sure that there was an appropriate balance. What he did not do was reconcile all of his trust account ledgers and the total of those accounts against what he should have been holding in his trust account. That's the nature of negligent misappropriation. When you mistakenly pay money out, but you don't have money in to cover that payment for that specific individual.
When he would call the bank, would he have a number in mind that he thought from the ledger card should be available for that client?
I don't know that that's part of the record in terms of how he actually did it. I get the sense that Mr. Comet was fairly overwhelmed by his work and what he had to do, and
I'm not sure
that he gave it.
Mm-hmm. I ask the question, Ms. Hill, because the point that you make about keeping ledger cards to the penny should suggest that he would know and go to that source that he was maintaining to have a number in mind that he should be able to pay out to the client.
Correct.
And we're simply confirming it with the bank.
I think he probably had a sense. I mean, I don't recall every single piece of testimony.
Mm-hmm.
My sense is that he would have a sense of what was happening in each case and what was going to have to be distributed, but I don't believe he ever added them up even in his head. I mean, there's nothing to indicate that he had enough of a handle on his trust accounts, that he complied sufficiently with the rules on his trust or any other account to make sure that, that his total balance was adequate. And again, that's the nature of negligent misappropriation.
He never looked at bank statements on his trust?
I beg your pardon, Justice.
Never looked at bank statements on his trust account?
I don't believe he did, no.
Did he testify at the hearing that he would, from time to time, call the bank about balances in different accounts?
Yes.
So tell us why we should not defer to the special master's findings, who listened to his testimony, and in particular was troubled by this October 1 transfer and similar transfers and found that your client lacked credibility.
Well, the record indicates that he did make those calls to make sure there was sufficient funds to make sure what the overdraft was. And either that or they called him. He had overdraft protection. I've never had overdraft protection. My understanding is they do notify you when you've gone into the overdraft protection, and then you know the amount that you need to pay in to bring the account to a positive balance or at least a zero balance where you're no longer in overdraft. The special master relied on a number of factors that are not supported by the record. If you'll forgive me for one moment, I would like to get back to and then go into the factors, but what he did when he found out that the DeVito money wasn't there, because he believed the money was there, and he recorded the subtractions from the account. It's not as he didn't do what Skevin did, which was to take money out and then put money back in. Skevin, of course, put in more than $1 million in personal funds and was never in a positive balance. He was, I think, at the conclusion of the audit, he'd gone up and down in the amounts and was still out of trust by $133,000. In Mr. Comet's case, as soon as he realized that he had not received the DeVito funds, because he went to the bank and he talked to the bank manager and he said, I shouldn't be having this issue here, I should be able to make this client payment, the bank manager and he located the fact that he did not receive the $50,000 from DeVito. And at that point, as I said, he first called DeVito. Then he called his brother-in-law and arranged for a check for $50,000, which he immediately deposited to his trust account. He never exceeded the $50,000 amount. It didn't go up and down. It wasn't like, let me take $10,000 now and then put $5,000 back in later. He gradually distributed what he thought was his $50,000 fee. He also then contacted an attorney who was an ethics expert from his perspective, who advised him to contact his accountant and put his accounts back in balance. He contacted Robert Colhagen, hired him to look at his accounts and make sure everything was okay. He then received the notice of the random audit, and at that point he advised Mr. Colhagen to expand the work that he was doing on his behalf to then do a reconstruction of the accounts. This was prior to the random audit itself, and obviously required some time to manage those records.
At what point were those original records destroyed?
Were the original records destroyed? There were never any original records that were destroyed. That is a major error in this whole case, and I hope to be able to let you know why that's a fiction. The auditor knew on the day of the October 2008 audit that Mr. Comet had very limited records and that most were not maintained by Comet. If you look at OAE Exhibit 105, it's the bait stamp is OAE 1100. There are a series of questions that the auditor fills out on the day of the audit in a questionnaire, the random audit questionnaire. The question number 5 in Section 2 states, after you received our notice of audit, did you, meaning Mr. Comet, create any records that were not previously maintained? The auditor fills out this form. She circled yes, and in handwritten notes stated, all trust records were generated pursuant to REP notice letter. BIS A/C business account will be provided. The next question, if the bank reconciliations were done by someone other than you, was the work reviewed by you? The answer is yes. If so, how frequent was the review? The answer, only for the audit. So that in concert with, this is R1, which is the Random Audit Program Record Keeping Deficiencies Checklist. This checklist allows for entry of, there's space on each side of the question. My understanding is the star indicates there's a deficiency. There are 16 stars on this sheet. Clearly, Mr. Comet was really deficient. There were also a number of items that are circled that indicate there is an issue. There are some notations, but none of them say anything about, none of these items say anything about Mr. Colhagen told me that records were destroyed. There were no records to destroy. The original bank statements, ledgers, etc., were either provided during the audit or shortly thereafter. Many materials were provided to the auditor. At one point, Mr. Comet testified that 3 boxes of materials were delivered to the auditor, and he believes those included any original audits. He never heard Mr. Colhagen say anything about destruction of records. He never authorized any destruction of records, and there is nothing in any of the evidence to indicate that any records were destroyed. The only thing that happened was that records were changed from Quicken to QuickBooks in order for Mr. Colhagen to perform the reconciliations. That's the only activity that might possibly be considered as destruction of anything. But anybody who's worked with Quicken or QuickBooks knows you don't have a whole lot of control if you're transferring one program to, from one program to another. Basically, the system does what it wants to do.
Clarify something a little further along those lines.
Okay.
He said there were limited records that he mm-hmm. had at around the time of the audit.
Right.
What happened to those other records that were no longer available?
There were none that were no longer available. What was available was provided to the account, the auditor.
Was anything missing?
Ultimately anything was missing. This is really the kicker in this whole series of events. The auditor testified.
Even you've described it as limited, and I'd like you to explain
right.
why.
Well, they were limited because he no longer had a lot of the bank statements. The audit period is, I think it's a 2-year period generally.
So what happened to those records?
He didn't maintain a number of books and records, just like many of the individuals who've been reprimanded for negligent misappropriation.
So
those records that he did maintain, he provided.
So what did he not maintain?
He didn't maintain a receipts and disbursements journal. He didn't reconcile his accounts, so he didn't have the records of the reconciliation that you're supposed to keep. He didn't have a number of deposit slips. He might have had copies. Most of the documents that he didn't maintain were obtainable via subpoena and indeed were obtained by the auditor by subpoenaing the bank. And during the hearing, the auditor testified that she did not really need the original records. She just liked to have them. That is not a sufficient basis to disbar somebody.
The bank statements themselves, he
yes.
did not look at those and he did not maintain them?
No, he was negligent. I mean, the bank statements he didn't retain rather than maintain. I don't think he had a large number of bank statements available at the time of the audit. But he didn't destroy them in anticipation of the audit either.
Were all of those bank records found during the course of the audit?
Pardon me, one second.
Were all of the bank statements obtained from the bank or elsewhere during the course?
My understanding is that the auditor was able to obtain everything that she needed through the bank that Mr. Comet did not have in his possession.
Including all of the bank statements?
Yes. And one of the issues with regard to the testimony about destruction of records is that it's impermissible hearsay. There's nothing that confirms it in the entire, I don't know, 6-day hearing? I can't recall how many days of hearing, but it was a very lengthy hearing. There is no documentation, and there's no testimony beyond that statement by the auditor. And as such, it shouldn't be relevant to any consideration of the determination what happens to Mr. Comet in this matter. Again, the destruction of records issue is, it's simply a fiction. It didn't happen. Also here, I think you've hit upon the issue of credibility. The special master decided that the records had been improperly destroyed. That formed a strong basis for his determination that Mr. Comet lacked credibility. In addition to his confusion about how Mr. Comet dealt with the banks because he was putting in money that was close to the penny because he had the information directly from the bank. Also, there was some discussion in the dissent about Mr. Comet's failure to recall whether he accessed any trust account information online. And initially he said he didn't recall doing that. Later in his testimony he indicated that he did access or had the capability of accessing his trust account online. This event occurred, the end of the DeVito negligent misappropriations were in March of 2008. Contrary to what the OAE said, it occurred over an 11-month period, not for more than a year. It's a distinction with some difference, especially given that it ended in March of 2008 and he was testifying between 8 and 9 years later. Obviously, we all have issues with regard to what we remember and how we remember it. I don't think that the passage of time should be discounted in terms of why Mr. Comet might not have been totally consistent in his testimony. And that was, however, a major reason that the dissent noted a lack of credibility on behalf of Mr. Comet. It's also extremely relevant. There are two issues that are relevant. Mr. DeVito, I think, comes across as trying to get away with something in terms of not paying Mr. Comet. They had meetings during this 11-month period, and Mr. Comet provided timesheets to him, which unfortunately he didn't retain copies of. And Mr. DeVito admitted that they met. Mr. DeVito also admitted that he'd read the agreement and admitted that he had promised to make the payment and never told Mr. Comet that he hadn't made the payment. The reason for the agreement was that, as noted by my adversary, Mr. DeVito was slow to pay on the monthly billings that Mr. Comet gave to him beginning in 2004 when they started their attorney-client relationship. The issue of payment by Mr. DeVito during that time was something that Mr. Comet wanted to avoid, and that's why he had that the new agreement, the March 5th, 2007 letter, an agreement with Mr. DeVito, and they had agreed that that would be how he was paid. Had Mr. Comet not be paid, I mean, we raised the issue of whether Mr. Comet needed money. Yeah, he needed money. He was working hard. He wasn't making a lot of money. Had he not been paid, he would have billed Mr. DeVito for the time he had spent on his various cases. He wouldn't have just let it ride, but he didn't submit a single bill during this 11-month period. That is totally inconsistent with his conduct between 2004 and 2007. So that also supports Mr. Comet's claim that he believed the money had been deposited.
Can I go back to your statement?
Sure.
You kind of went through it quickly before, but when you said hearsay, are you referring to...
I'm referring to the auditor's statement.
The auditor's statement that was repeat, the word destroyed in quotes in the brief.
That original records
that
were
came
destroyed.
Out of Mimi Lakin's mouth, referring to your audit.
It was in her testimony, and it's not supported. It's not on any of her written materials. If she heard it from Colhagen, it would have been during the original audit when they were all together.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure I had straight your reference to the hearsay.
Sure.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. Thank you.
It's not just the word destroy, I take it, that you take issue with. The dissent found that the records were purposefully made unavailable to
absolutely.
The OAE, and you differ with that as well.
We strongly disagree with that representation. Mr. Comet was nothing but cooperative as the matter went forward, and it's pretty clear that the scope of the audit, the extent of the audit, continued to change over the 3 years that the auditor was reviewing this. And she never found anything else beyond the information that was related to her on the first day of the audit. So they're constantly providing documents to Ms. Lakin at her request, and sometimes she sent another request before she even reviewed the documents that had been provided. So there was a lot of scurrying that went on between Mr. Colhagen and Mr. Comet to try to get the information to her. And also, remember, those records were being reconstructed. They didn't exist. So that took significant time. Excuse me.
Can I just clarify a couple of things?
Sure. I'm sorry. I should be more formal, of course.
The trust account was never overdrawn.
No, never.
The attorney account, however, was over, or the business account, a number of times, 13 times or so.
Sure.
And the personal account.
Mm-hmm.
And you said that he would call the bank to make sure there was enough available to pay whatever he was paying. Was that only with respect to the trust account?
Yes.
But never with respect to the attorney or the personal?
I believe that was simply to determine the amounts of the overdrafts. And again, he had the overdraft.
But he never
perfection.
Overdrafted the trust account.
Never overdrafted the trust account. Never.
Okay, so, but would he call the bank to make sure there was money in the trust account to pay the various expenses related to the trust account?
Not the expenses, the money, the funds that were due to the clients.
Yes.
possibly even to check to see if a check had cleared from a client deposit, which makes a lot of sense.
And he would call the bank to check on that with respect to the trust.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the other question. Go ahead.
So if he, I misunderstood. I thought you said earlier he was calling, perhaps called the bank with regard to personal and business accounts, but not the trust account. Are you suggesting that he called about the trust account but didn't notice a $50,000 discrepancy?
Right. I think it was just when he was issuing a large payout on a particular client transaction to make sure another check had cleared. He would check with the bank to ensure that that check had cleared.
So when you call the bank, they tell you, I assume if you're asking what I have in the account, they're giving you the answer. Wouldn't he then have had reason to know that he was $50,000 short, the Adams DeVito payment?
I honestly don't know what the total amount in his trust account was at any one point in time. It may well be part of the record. If you give me 1 second, I can double check. Mr. Comet advised that I misspoke, that he didn't call the bank about the overdraft amounts, that he received specific overdraft notices. And that's what resulted in his payments on his bank statement, business account, and personal account. He would get an overdraft notice that says you're X dollars and X cents overdrawn. And that would be what he transferred.
So, and after getting all of those, he didn't look at bank statements, and he never called the bank. He just took it at face value and tried to cover the amounts? Is that what we're understanding?
Well, when we're talking about his business and personal accounts, yes, I believe that's accurate.
Justice, I'm sorry I interrupted.
Back to the trust account.
Sure.
But he apparently did make calls regarding the trust account to make sure that when he was issuing a large check, presumably client funds, there was money to pay it.
I think it was when he was issuing a large check to make sure that check had cleared from which he was issuing the additional check.
He never called to say, what's my balance?
I don't think so, not just specifically.
And one other question. He received, he thought, a payment from one client for $50,000
mm-hmm.
wired so that he wouldn't have to keep chasing him for his fees.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't for a year. I presume he did work on that case?
Yes, he did.
But never sent a bill saying, you know, now I've used up $1,000 for this amount of time, you know, I have $49,000 left in your account. That never happened. He never sent any bills, any notices, anything about the drawdown of the $50,000 to pay for fees he was generating.
No, the fees he understood were his to do what he needed or wanted to
for work.
Once they were in his trust account.
For work.
They were earned fees.
Work he had already earned?
It was basically a retainer for the year's work instead of billings.
Okay, let me stop you for a minute. Let me
sure.
just ask the question. He got $50,000 toward work he was going to do in the coming year. Yes?
For the entire year.
For the coming year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And he would do work for the coming year.
Mm-hmm.
And that $50,000 or part of it in his trust account now belonged to him because he'd done the work.
Yes, it belonged to him even before he did the work. His prior agreements with Mr. DeVito were minimum fees per year of $50,000.
And that money was supposed to stay in his trust account for a year even though he was earning it?
No.
Or was he transferring it to...
It was his to do what he should have, he should have transferred it to his business account
but
right away.
But this time... He left the 50 in the trust account and thought it was there and never knew it wasn't.
Correct.
Okay.
And he drew against it on the basis that he believed it was there.
But never transferred it to the attorney account or the...
No,
even when he had shortages in those accounts and knew the DeVito money was in the trust account to cover some of those shortages.
Well, But the DeVito money was in the trust account to do whatever he wanted with.
Listen to me. You're making two arguments. One is the $50,000 was his to do with as he wished. As he wished. Minimum fee. It's his. He should have put it in his attorney business account. He now has overdrafts for which he's being charged in his business account and his personal account. He never in a year went to the $50,000 and said, yeah, it's my money anyway. He owed it to me. He paid it. He's not entitled to a dollar back and covered the overdrafts with that rather than his own whatever.
Well, he did use the money to cover the overdrafts.
The $50,000.
Yes. Yes. I think most of the transactions went either to the overdrafts in his personal account or the overdrafts in his business account.
And that's why the trust account was out of trust but not overdrawn.
It was out of trust. It would have been overdrawn if, I mean, he would have learned earlier that there was a problem had he not had a large amount of client funds in the account. So that's not why it wasn't overdrawn. I mean, I think it was probably luck that it wasn't overdrawn earlier, but that doesn't convert. And had it been overdrawn earlier, he would have dealt with it earlier as he did here.
But he was out of trust because he thought that $50,000 was there and it wasn't.
Correct. Out of trust versus an actual overdraft in the trust account. They're two different things.
How many overdrafts were there in the 11-month period during which he had DeVito's $50,000?
Overdrafts in his trust account?
No, in his business account that he's getting charged for repeatedly.
I think he was possibly overdrawn. I mean, I know he was overdrawn way before he ever had this, believed he had the $50,000. It was a pattern and practice for him over the years to overdraw his business and personal accounts. And
but
then
during this, do you know approximately how many overdrafts there were in this 11-month period?
I don't. And
how much he was charged on those overdrafts?
He was charged a lot of money. He was not a wise business person.
Justice Solomon's question, like if he had $50,000 to which he was entitled to, like, why wouldn't he be moving it over? He's overdrafting and then suffering terrible penalties. Doesn't make any sense, no?
Well, how Mr. Comet handled his money versus how you handle your money or I might handle my money are not necessarily, they're certainly not the same. But being stupid or negligent, as I said, or making bad financial choices doesn't convert it to knowing misappropriation. Because, obviously, he had access to, he had the ability to borrow the funds from his brother-in-law, and if he realized earlier on that he was having a problem with, because he had not actually received the funds from Mr. DeVito, then he would have done something about it. He would have borrowed the money earlier from his brother-in-law.
During the year period when he thought he had the $50,000 mm-hmm. in there, what was the range of the value of the trust account, the monies in the trust account?
I don't know that off the top of my head. It's probably in the report of the auditor, but that's nothing that I recall the board said. Maybe my adversary has that information.
So,
I don't have it.
So here's what I'm wrestling with, and I'll put it to you directly so that you can respond directly. If you call a bank and say, or go to a bank and say, I want to issue a check for $7,181, do I have enough money to do that? The response you usually get is, yes, you have $14,000, you have enough.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't end with the word yes. On multiple occasions, I gather, he was told how much was in his trust account, and we're being asked to accept that notwithstanding that, he had no way of knowing that he was $50,000 short?
No, it wasn't that he was told how much was in his trust account. He was told that a check had cleared so that he could issue another check from that client's account. I don't believe he ever had
What's the testimony with regard to this?
My recollection, hopefully correct, is that he never thought he was out of trust with regard to any of his clients.
Let me narrow it. What's the testimony with respect to him going to or calling the bank? What was the nature of the back and forth on those occasions?
I think he just told me that, and that should be consistent with the testimony, that the information he received on the bank overdrafts for his business account and his personal account was the result of mailings from the bank saying your account is overdrawn by X dollars and X cents. With regard to any calls to the bank, where I believe he had dealings with the bank manager, it's my understanding that the calls weren't what's the total picture in my trust account. The calls were, has this check, particular client check, cleared? Because I have to write another check. Let's say I have a closing and you get a check for a couple hundred thousand dollars. Before you can distribute those funds to anybody, that deposit has to first clear so that the funds are actually in your account. So then funds would be distributed from that particular check. If that check's cleared, obviously you have enough in the account for that particular client. Doesn't necessarily address the total picture with regard to his trust account.
I understand the example you've just given. To be clear, though, from what we're being told, he never asked in any of these conversations, what's my balance in my trust account?
I don't believe so, because his concern would have been the particular client and the particular check that came in.
Okay.
Again, I wanted to stress that the board found that he had a reasonable belief that he likely had a reasonable belief that the $50,000 payment had been made by DeVito and was in his trust account. And again, had he realized that he was working for free, clearly he would have billed Mr. DeVito, and he then would have gone back and rectified any errors with DeVito's client ledger and deposited funds into the account. I wanted to point to the character evidence in this matter.
May I ask a question?
Yes.
During the 11-month period, what was he billing? How much work did he do for DeVito?
I don't know the total amount, and he never submitted a bill to DeVito, so that's difficult.
And he didn't keep time records?
He kept time records, and he gave them to Mr. DeVito without keeping copies.
That's a little strange.
Well,
to say the least.
I'm just telling you what the record reflects, sir. I mean, Mr. DeVito was perfectly happy having Mr. Comet work for him for free, and as I said, had he realized
Who gives their time records to their client without keeping
their own
time records?
They were in the file that he gave to the client, so that's how that happened. I started to note that the character...
Wait a minute. He gave the client the file. Yes?
Yes.
He didn't give him records of his time as he was going along. He gave them all at once when he gave him the file.
I believe that these were not incredibly long-term matters.
Let me ask you. He gave him the whole file, and he had time records in it, so he gave him the time records. He wasn't giving him time records as he went along using up the 50 grand, correct?
He gave him time records, and I don't think he equated it to a dollar amount due because he wasn't going to charge him anymore.
You just said, all I'm asking is, he had all the time records in a file. It's not like he said, this is Monday, this is May, this is June, this is July. He had all the time records in a file. He gave the file to the client, you just said.
The time records that applied to the individual matter were in that individual matter's file. So he was working on much more than one matter for Mr. DeVito.
Okay, so the time records are in that file on that matter for Mr. DeVito. He gave that file to Mr. DeVito, which included time records, all at once. I'm just trying to get at, did he send him time records as he was accruing time and fees during that 11 months, or did it all go to him at one time?
He had numerous meetings with Mr. DeVito, and I had the sense from the record that he gave those time records to Mr. DeVito when he met with him. It wasn't like
altogether.
Each time he met with him.
So he gave him over a period of time, he gave him records.
Right. If they met monthly, he would give him the information on what he had done that month.
Not bills, just time records.
Just time records. He didn't. The agreement did not require any invoicing. It was just a $50,000 fee that was paid, he believed was paid. I started to address the issue of character evidence. Should be considered as both a mitigating factor as well as an indication of the fact that he would not knowingly misappropriate client funds. There were nearly 50 letters submitted in his behalf, all describing him in glowing terms, including indicating that he was, in the writer's view, what a lawyer should be. I don't believe this has been given due weight by the dissent. In terms of the recommended sanction, obviously, we distinguish this significantly from Skevin. It is not willful blindness. It may well be stupidity. It may well be simply being too busy to attend to his duties as an attorney, which is not unique to Mr. Comet. Again, there was no destruction of records. But if you look at the prior discipline that's occurred in negligent misappropriation cases, even serious negligent misappropriation cases, even cases nearly identical to that of Mr. Comet, the discipline is normally limited to a reprimand. We cited the Gonzalez case in our brief. Mr. Gonzalez had also received a prior admonition, I think 2 years before the 2016 decision in his matter. Mr. Gonzalez had relied on the representation of a client. The client had deposited certain funds to his attorney's trust account when he had not. He also dispersed those funds that he believed had been deposited, causing an invasion of client funds. Apparently, Mr. Gonzalez failed to restore all missing funds in the account for nearly 2 years after the discovery, unlike Mr. Comet, who immediately restored the funds. And he was not able to reconcile his accounts for approximately 22 months. The board considered those 22 months, that length of time, to be egregious. Nonetheless, reprimanded Gonzalez despite the fact that he had a prior disciplinary history. Also, the cases of Johnson and Maida, 2018 cases, both of those attorneys had been previously disciplined. Both were found to have negligently misappropriated client funds. Again, this is not a Skevin willful blindness case, and nor is it an intentional ignorance case. As I said, it's his failure to act. It's his failure to follow through. In our view, especially when you dissect this case and you take away the issue of destruction of records, which there was not, and you address the fact that Mr. DeVito's and Mr. Comet's testimony was in agreement in large part in terms of what they discussed and how they discussed it, what Mr. DeVito was supposed to do, etc., then you can't come to the conclusion that they are not credible as to the specific facts of this case. With regard to the auditor's testimony, there is a credibility issue there with regard to her testimony about destruction of records that is simply unsupported in the record. This is a case where there was negligent misappropriation. There was a failure to act. There's also been a huge passage of time here, which is, in Mr. Comet's view, not attributable to him. I would note the fact that it took 3 years for the complaint to be filed. And then between 2012 and 2015, there was a 3.5-year period where nothing happened. His counsel had been appointed, and a new special master had yet to be appointed. That's a significant delay that the system really should not tolerate and should consider in favor of any respondent involved in that type of situation. He has had a proctor since 2011, 8 years with a proctor, and there has not been a single issue. And again, all of his accounts, his ledger sheets, were kept to the penny. He made significant mistakes. They are not mistakes that should result in disbarment. He also should... he also has, of course, a strong reputation for good character and good works in his community and at his synagogue. And given all of these factors, we request that the findings of the board majority be adopted and that discipline here be limited because it's only negligent misappropriation, which I don't want to trivialize negligent misappropriation, but it is certainly not knowing misappropriation. And other similar negligent misappropriation cases have resulted in only a reprimand.
Thank you, Ms. Horton.
Thank you.
Before we turn to Mr. Comet, Ms. Horton, you heard the back and forth with regard to the availability of original records, and
yes.
We invited your response. Just give Ms. Hill a second.
I would direct the court to the transcript dated 5T, page 93, line 1 to 2. This is during respondent's testimony, so it's the, I can give you the date if you want at 5T. So 5T was the November 28th, 2016 transcript. And there, respondent admitted that there were certain things that Ms. Leckhand requested at the random audit, which did not exist. He admitted, for example, that he could not provide deposit slips. He could not find his Quicken ledger, so that's before it was converted to QuickBooks, for the Adam Tech ledger, although he believed that he had maintained one when he was maintaining one in Quicken. He admitted that prior to the audit, he did not properly maintain his books and records in general. He admitted that he did not reconcile and that he did not always open bank statements. And in fact, I'm not sure if that's in 5T or 6T, maybe at page 80, but one or the other, 5T or 6T, he does discuss that he did not check on the status of funds in his attorney trust account prior to making disbursements, that he kept it in his head, that he knew what he had and what would be available to him. So basically, 5T, page 93, 6T, transcript 6T, page 40, page 42, and 6T in the 80s, like page 80 through 83, is the bulk of the discussion of what he was unable to provide to
Is there any testimony that suggests that after the audit began, the documents were destroyed?
We have Ms. LeCan's testimony that she heard that from Cole Hagen. She was cross-examined on that and maintained that that was what Cole Hagen told her. So that's what we have in regards to discussion.
What's the OAE's position as to the destruction of records based on your review of this case?
My position is that Cole Hagen told Ms. LeCan that the records were destroyed. Whether that meant they were destroyed during the conversion from Quicken to QuickBooks, I don't know, but you know that's what the testimony is, and she was cross-examined on it and maintained it, and there has been no indication
She was cross-examined on someone else's hearsay statement.
I'm sorry.
She was cross-examined on someone else's hearsay statement as to whether the records were destroyed.
She was cross-examined onto a statement that she heard.
Well,
that was made
if she
her,
heard
it,
it that was out of courtroom. That's called hearsay. So she was cross-examined on hearsay statement. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
And hearsay is permitted in ethics.
Thank you. Ms. Hill, did you want to respond?
Yeah, I do want to respond because obviously hearsay is permitted in ethics matters only to a limited state. It's not permitted to establish a primary aspect of the case that would lead this court to think that the respondent is somehow trying to hide the conduct with regard to his accounts. And that's really what's happening here. If you're saying he destroyed these records so we couldn't find out about it, I mean, that's a terrible accusation. Why would that not be part of the notes that the auditor has written down? Why would that not be a primary aspect of the charge and the complaint? Instead of backdooring it and bringing it in during the hearing and then allowing the special master to adopt hearsay testimony to conclude that the respondent is not credible. It's simply inappropriate. It's a terrible way to process a case. And if there was more information, if Mr. Cole Hagen did indeed say to the auditor, oh, we destroyed those records. I mean, that's pretty cavalier. That's pretty damning. Why didn't Mr. Cole Hagen come in and testify for the OAE to confirm that auditor's statement? He didn't. He wasn't called. Didn't come in to testify for respondent because respondent owed him money. And, you know, you and I both know you can't get an expert to come in unless you pay that expert in advance. So the
the OAE has fallen short here, and there is no proof of, regarding the destruction of records, and for that fiction to carry throughout this case and result in this level of the suggestion of this level of discipline against the respondent is just simply improper. With regard to his testimony, I didn't catch all the citations made by my adversary, but I don't believe any of those citations say, oh yeah, we destroyed records. And we have admitted from the beginning, and Ms. Lakin certainly knew from the first day I showed you R1 with those 16 notations, all of those things were missing. They were not provided. They were provided at a later point if they were reconstructed. And Mr. Comet, since 2011, has been in compliance with the record-keeping rules. There's no suggestion that in any other matter he mishandled any other client funds.
Have you had an opportunity to speak with Mr. Comet? Would he like to address the court?
I don't know. Let me see. Did you want to address the court?
Your Honor, originally I was not going to address the court. I was going to defer to my attorney.
You are going to come to the center if you'll speak to us.
May it please the court. Originally, I was not going to address the court. I was going to defer to my attorney's statements. But there are certain things that need to be clarified, which I believe that my attorney is either unaware of or that the court still has questions on. The first one is the October 1st, 2017 withdrawal. That is the only withdrawal, if you'll notice, that has an odd number. It ends in a 1, 7,181. That withdrawal, although it was definitely done from my trust account and it was done afterwards with my knowledge, was not made by me. I did not transfer those funds out. Gwen, the bank manager who I had a banking relationship with, at this point, come October, because there had been previous withdrawals that I had made, she took the responsibility on herself, I guess, and decided to withdraw the exact number needed to cover the overdraft. If you notice, every other withdrawal was not done in an odd, weird number like that. It was either done in an even number or was done in a rounded number. And I'm not saying that that withdrawal was not done with my authorization. Afterwards, I knew about it and I didn't fight it. I'm just saying that specific withdrawal was not done by me.
Did you authorize the
bank manager? I did not. What I did after... I apologize.
Did you authorize the bank manager to have permission to withdraw from your trust account?
Definitely not. However, since I had previously done that in the past, and she knew that because I had gone through her to do it, she fills out slips, she then did it on her own. I agree it's a bank issue. It's not legitimate. However, I did not object to it after the fact because I would have done the same thing. I would have used a different number. I probably would have gone to 70 or 85 or something. I would have gone a different number I would have taken out, but I definitely would have covered my overdraft. I would have done the exact same thing, but with a different number. The reason I'm mentioning that is because if you notice, the amounts that were needed to cover the overdraft was because I was notified by the bank on any overdrafted account that I had, both in business and in personal. They notified me electronically by email, and they notified me by mail. They sent me a notice saying exactly what was overdrawn. My accounts were consistently overdrafted, and I would say to answer to one of the justices' questions of how much, it came to thousands of dollars, almost $10,000 a year, maybe more, in overdraft. Ridiculous banking, and thank God now it's very different. But when I didn't have the funds, that was my way of being able to still stay in business without having the funds that came
in. What you're telling us about what the bank did is quite astonishing.
I'm telling you the facts.
I know, because assuming the money in your trust account is for clients, for a bank manager to take out money from a trust account to cover a personal account?
I understand. If I would have complained to the bank, they would have obviously put it back. But I did not, and I said that. Again, I'm saying I would have done the exact same thing. I just would not have done it with this specific number. That's how I know it's not me. The ending in this way, if you'll compare it to all the other ones, you'll notice it's a different denomination, and that's how I know it wasn't me. And I actually yelled at her about that. But I'm not complaining about the withdrawal. I'm saying that that specific withdrawal, which came to light and brought question to the court, is because of its number. It's the exact penny of what was needed, and that's why it's something that is questionable to the court.
This was a focal point of the hearing, this transaction, or was it not?
No.
Were you questioned about it at the hearing?
I was questioned the same way I was with all the other 13 withdrawals.
Did you provide that answer at
the hearing? I did. I said that this particular one was made by the branch manager. There was also one other one. There was one other transaction that I disputed. There was one, I don't remember the date, but it was called a cash transaction. I have never taken out cash from my trust account, period. I dispute.
So here you are. You can explain why.
Sure.
The things appear a little odd, at least to me.
Happy to answer.
You know that you're repeatedly out of, you're exceeding the balance in your business account, and you believe you have $50,000.
Correct.
That's yours in your trust account.
Correct.
Like, why aren't you moving your $50,000 over?
And that's why I'm standing up here right now to answer that question. Unfortunately, and this is obviously the same error that I didn't know that how to do my trust account, is the same error of where to put the funds. When I got paid from DeVito previously, it was either through salary or through payment of a bill. And in my mind, it might have been erroneous, but in my mind, if it wasn't one of those two things, if it was retainer funds, I thought, obviously erroneously, that I had to put it in my trust account until it was earned. And the way it was earned was by meeting with DeVito. I had numerous, at least twice a month, maybe more. Meetings with DeVito.
You had those meetings. I guess that's what I was trying to get at. You had those meetings. You gave him those bills.
No. Are you talking about prior to this $50,000?
No. After the $50,000.
Yes.
You had meetings with him. You gave him timesheets.
No. That's another mistake. I did not give him timesheets. I showed him the work that I did, and I told him how much time was spent on that work.
And you knew how much you were owed on that work.
And I knew how much I was owed on that work.
You never gave him a bill.
I did not give him a bill.
And you never transferred that money from trust.
I did.
To attorney's account.
You did. I did. Of course I did.
You never checked with the bank to see, do I have that $50,000 in the trust account to start moving money so that you're not lapping.
No, I never did that. I only did that if a check came in. If a large check came in.
Did you ever ask if the 50 cleared?
I did. Well, it was a wire. I knew it was a wire.
Is it any different when you call to make sure a check clears?
Yes.
Is it any different than when you're told a wire's coming in for $50,000, you call and say, did the wire come in?
Yes, it's very different. Number one, I was told that the wire was sent. Number two, I would not call on a wire because I don't have to wait for, there's no waiting period for a wire to know if it's cleared. And third of all, there was a $50,000 wire right around that time that I mistakenly, totally negligently, thought was from DeVito. It happened to have been from a different closing, but that's what led me to believe that DeVito paid me.
So you're saying over time, how much of that $50,000 did you use over that 11 months?
48, I don't remember the exact number, 40-something.
Used almost all of it.
I'm sorry?
Used almost all of it.
Almost all of it.
And you knew because you kept scrupulous ledger cards?
I had individual, right. I did not have a global, what told me what was in the account. I had individual Quicken, not QuickBooks, Quicken account ledgers for each client. So that's why each client's account was to the penny. Because when money went in and money went out, I did it on Quicken, which unfortunately only allows you to do individual accounts, not a global account with sub-accounts. That was quickly changed when I went to a different bank and was able to open sub-accounts.
But presumably monthly you got trust account bank statements that would show the balances and generally and globally.
Correct.
But you never opened them.
No, not never. The testimony, if you'll look at the record, is that some of the statements were opened and a number of statements were not opened.
Were any of them opened after you got the $50,000?
I'm sure they were.
In that 11 months.
I'm sure they were. But the balance would not have meant, the number that was in there, let's just say the number was $300,000, that would not have meant anything to me based on the $50,000. I would not have known whether it was there or not based on that.
Even though $300,000, $50,000 is a big chunk of it, you did it all from memory. You had
no, rough. And that's another, nowhere in the record, not one no. time I'm did just, I say I'm that just, I did this I'm from just, my mind. Just, that's I'm absurd. Just,
hold on.
Never said that.
Hold on, take a deep breath. Okay, I'm sorry.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Your attorney said that you kept track
through Quicken.
By memory.
No, through Quicken. Everything was written in Quicken. That's how I was able to...
Only ledger cards, not the global...
Correct. And bank statements, which I opened, but only some of them. That was one issue. That was overdraft.
Can I ask a question about the overdraft?
Yes.
You said you had overdraft fees of more than $10,000?
I don't know the exact number. I can't testify to that, but yes, I had a large number. I don't remember the exact number. Over years, meaning each year I had significant fees More than in the thousands of dollars each year, yes.
Each year?
Yes.
And what did you do to try to remedy that problem?
I don't understand the question.
You had thousands of dollars during this one-year period, for
yes.
example, in overdraft fees.
Right.
Did you try to figure out how do I avoid incurring these
oh, of course.
Thousands of dollars of fees?
I mean, obviously the goal is to try to increase business and to try to make sure that I have enough money coming in.
Tell us what you did.
So now I've done that. You're talking about what steps I've taken right now?
What steps at this time did you take in order to get to the bottom of the problem? At the time in question, the one-year period.
Okay, so first of all, any fees that come in, any legal fees, no matter what form of fee it is, it goes into my business account. It does not go into my trust account. The only money, and I can tell you frankly, I do not use my trust account except for rare circumstances where I'm representing a seller in a real estate transaction where the money either sits in my account until closing or I have it sitting by the title company.
Are you describing the year in question now?
No, I'm telling you the steps that I've taken now. Are you talking about that particular year?
I'm asking about that year.
So in that year, I took no steps. During that year, I was constantly in overdraft. I did not take any steps during that year to remedy the situation.
Why were you constantly in overdraft?
Because I had more expenses than I had income. And I constantly had bills to pay. And as the bills came in and they were being paid, I was charged $34 a pop in order to cover the overdraft. And 34 times whatever that was each month was a significant amount of money.
I guess you figured it was cheaper than a line of credit.
It was cheaper than a line of credit, which I probably could not have gotten anyways.
Even though you thought you had a cushion of $50,000.
It wasn't a cushion to me. Until I cleared, that money was not mine. In my mind, I'm clearly wrong. But in my mind, that money was not mine until I had performed the work for it and met with DeVito. And I did that before I cleared each one of those funds.
So every time you met with him,
yes.
Did you transfer some money out of the trust account?
I can't say that I did it every time I met with him, but I only transferred money from the account after I met with DeVito.
So
does that mean that I did it each time? I don't know. I can't tell you
saying,
that.
You're saying you withdrew $48,000 or so from
correct.
The 50.
Correct.
And each time you discussed that with DeVito?
Before I made a withdrawal, DeVito knew that I had worked on that case. He said, yes, that's fine. He and I looked at the work that was done and the amount of time that was put on there. It wasn't a question.
And in looking back in hindsight, what was this a surreal conversation? Did DeVito
ever? This is what I'm trying to explain to you.
Did DeVito ever say to you, "Hey, I never gave you the $50,000"?
No. See, this is the point. At no time was the wire discussed with DeVito prior than the initial. Are you going to send the wire? And he said yes. After that, I assumed, and he assumed that I assumed that the money was sitting in my trust account. He never mentioned, "Oh, I." About to send you the wire, or I didn't send you the wire, and I didn't say anything because I was taking the money out of the account. So there was no reason. Prior to that, I was billing him. First, I was getting paid as a employee, and then when I started billing him on a regular basis, I noticed that it was getting harder to get the funds on a timely basis.
Are you telling us that not only you assumed the $50,000 was in the account, but he assumed he had given you $50,000?
No. I'm saying he assumed that I thought the money was there, which is why he didn't say anything. He's thinking that I thought the money was there, which is why I haven't said a word.
So he was basically playing you?
100%.
And then at the end of the day, after you've cleared $48,000 in payments that he's approved,
yes.
You settle this for $17,000?
$17,500, correct. Correct. What choice did I have? I'm in the middle of an audit. And no one's going to hire me. What choice do I have? Tell me. If I'm in the middle of an audit for 10 years and I can't join a firm, I can't become a partner, I can't do anything because I have this hanging over my head, what am I supposed to do? I'm a solo practitioner. I'm literally in limbo, which is why this hurts more than anything. 10 years of this hanging over my head. I got totally screwed. It's true. But I don't know what else to say. I don't know how else I'm supposed to, what should I have done? He wasn't going to offer anything more. He settled and negotiated with me. I asked for much more money. He said no. What choice did I have? Knowing that this audit was...
What other points did you...
Yes, I just want to say a few more things. One was the meetings that I had with him, the calls to the bank we discussed, and the October 1st, 2007 transaction. That was it. Everything else I'm deferring to my attorney. And I thank you for the court's time.
Thank you. Thank you to all parties. We'll take the matter under advisement. Court's in recess for the day.